Hi there, we really hope you enjoy this teaching from the Message Trust. To find out more about all the exciting things we're doing, check out our website, message.org.uk.
Okay, so thank you for coming to our seminar on reaching men and boys. I'm going to predominantly focus on reaching men of a certain age for a reason, and we will try and trip into some generational stuff if we've got time, but in the 45 minutes I've got, I can't really cover everything. But what I'm going to do is kind of introduce you to a strategy that CVM's used now for a number of years that really tips into male psychology and how men build relationships with each other, because we are a little bit strange, and then how we fuse that with the work of the Holy Spirit to see loads of men become followers of Jesus Christ. Got it? Should take us about 2 minutes, and then we can all go for coffee. So for many years, for about a decade, I was leading this ministry called Christian Vision for Men, which when I first went there was, I guess in some ways, it was moderately small and really was quite effective amongst middle-class guys, which was good. But for me, one of the overriding passions, as you'll probably pick up as you do as you go through the message conference, was how do we reach the missing millions? And the missing millions were the ordinary guys. They're just the fellas who got ordinary jobs. And the churches, I'll show you some statistics, was not just hemorrhaging these guys, they just didn't exist in the church. You know, all kinds of, the more and more I got into it, the more and more I realised how complex these issues were. So, for instance, when was the last time you heard a prayer in church for a van driver or lorry drivers or postmen or factory workers? But you hear prayers for teachers and doctors and nurses. And that's good, but we've done that because we perceive them to be more kingdom because they're caring professions. So the guys, the ordinary working guys, are sitting in church week in, week out thinking, or business guys, and they're thinking, why am I here? How does my faith even connect, you know, with church and the world? And I actually went to see one guy once who is on the other end of the scale, a young investment banker for a private bank. I visited him and I was a pastor of a church in Essex. And when I walked into the bank, he looked at me and literally went pale. And I said, mate, what's the matter? And he went, it's like God's just walked into my bank. And I went, it's really not. You know, it's beachy. And he went, yeah, I know, he said, but it's like for the first time my two worlds have just collided. Because he did his church thing, and then there was his work thing. And those worlds never connected. And a lot of you guys sitting out there will understand that. And there'll be women sitting out there today that you're going to hear things that I'm going to say in the next 45 minutes that are going to blow your mind. I'm going to give you the inner workings of the male species. And you're going to hear stuff and you think, that explains everything. Like, I never got that. Like, I remember once listening to this guy who back in the day was an RUC undercover cop. And then he was retired. And he said to me, I had a bit of an issue with my wife the other day. And I said, What happened? He said, well, I was sitting in my conservatory staring out of the window, and my wife came in and said, are you okay? And he went, yeah. He said, but you're not. He said, no, I am. She said, but you're clearly not. He said, what do you mean? She said, you've been sitting there staring out the window, not moved, for nearly an hour. She said, what's the problem? He said, nothing. He said, but why do you never share your feelings and thoughts with me? And he said, I don't think I got any. And she said, why are you staring out of the window for the last hour then? He said, actually, I'm just trying to line my left eye up with the lamppost and the tree out the window. And some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. This, ladies, is the inner working of the male species. And over the next 40 minutes, I'm going to show you how we turn that into gospel power to see lives transformed. However, I have been accused on Twitter feeds and various blogs and on Facebook over the years of being unthought through, cliched and shallow. And all of that is true when it comes to this subject. But it did force us to really do some deep and thorough research about male psychology and spirituality. I came to understand in the latter 2 or 3 years of CVM that I can't just spout nonsense. I can't just make jokes and give you shallow rhetoric. Actually, what you want is research and neuroscience and proof. So, at great expense, we undertook a filming project, and I'm going to show you a video which I think explains the rampant difference between the ordinary man and women. So, in Gloucester, there is a thing called the cheese rolling competition, where men and women chase cheese down a hill. And at great expense, we filmed it, and I'm going to show you the difference. By the way, this is just fun. It's just a laugh, but it does make some kind of point. This is not true of every man or woman. Honestly, there are broad spectrum masculinities. Let's just clear that up. You're not going to believe this now, but as well as weightlifting and endurance sports and stuff, I actually like painting with watercolors, and I do play classical piano, and I have had poems published. Do you believe me? It's actually true. And if you didn't believe that, that's really bad. But I'm saying there's a broad spectrum of masculinities and femininities, but let's go for the middle ground. Let's go for the middle ground. So this, first of all, is the women.
Now, Jesus Christ.
It's a very, very steep hill, I should point out. Very, very steep. You can't really tell that by looking at that, but hopefully to the men.
Last year.
Why did you do it?
It's tradition.
Do you like the cheese?
No.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is called testosterone. And we form on average 6 times more testosterone than women. Most women, anyway, not all women. And it affects our behaviour. It's why our voices drop. It's why we grow muscles. It's why we throw ourselves down hills after cheese that we don't even like. In fact, it also has very negative consequences. It's also why more men commit violent crime. It's why men get drawn into gangs. It's why more men are in prison. It's why around the world you have more boy soldiers than girl soldiers. It affects our behaviour in negative ways as well as positive ways. One of the things I've always said when it comes to men is that if we could harness our testosterone for good or not ill, it could be absolutely game-changing. But when men are bored and they don't feel like they're in a fight, actually it can be an extremely destructive force in our lives as well. So why more men get addicted, for instance. So there's a real issue here underlying some of the fun. We did some research. This was a BBC survey, and the overriding comment when we asked guys about church, they said that they think that church is irrelevant and it's only for wimps and women. I'll just show you some other stats as we go along, if I can get this little control working. Please change. Oh, there you go. Here's some other interesting stats for you. Something I pulled out earlier. 62% of regular attendees are middle class and only 38% are working class when it comes to men in the church. And yet the gospel's meant to be good news to the poor, isn't it? But I find that quite a challenge. It said something about our culture in church. But it becomes relevant when we think about how we reach out. Men between 40 to 55 stop attending church and are no longer dependent children at home. Not quite sure why that is. It's almost like, let's nurture our kids, we'll get involved in our faith, but actually when that reason's gone, we just stop going. And that also has to inform our outreach style and what happens within our churches. Unpartnered men and worship. unpartnered men, especially the working class, are the least likely to attend a place of worship and attend least frequently. That was YouGov in 2014. There's one man to two women in the church. That has significant consequences. For women, which says, you know, say 2.4 million women in the church, it means that marriage to a Christian man is not possible for every Christian woman. That's really serious. You know, like, I've got two teenage daughters. One's 19 and one's 17. And I'm quite biased, but, you know, they're good-looking girls and they're fun and they love Jesus. Man alive, it's a struggle for them to find godly boyfriends because there aren't that many boys in the church. Now, I need to explain here. I'm actually a church leader on the side. At the moment, I'm actually leading a church, and I planted it 3 years ago. And we're seeing some success. We're seeing people come to Christ, but it is still an issue. This, you know, I'd like to think I'm a specialist in reaching guys, and I think, I mean, I've got, it's a member of my church here, actually, at the moment, and I think our ratio is pretty good, isn't it, John, between men and women? But we have to really fight for it and work at it, and even getting a men's ministry off the ground is so hard. Why? Because men are, by nature, we can be quite apathetic spiritually, and we can be lazy spiritually, and we find it hard to engage spiritually. Some of it's because of disconnect and some of it's busyness, but it is what it is. Spiritual fatherlessness for children is significant. Only 11% of our grandchildren will have a Christian father and mother if the current trend continues. Only 11%. You know, fatherlessness is a massive issue. You know, we do a lot of work, as you know, in the message with prisons and ex-offenders. I cannot even begin to tell you how many male ex-offenders have wrestled with fatherlessness and a lack of spiritual mentors. It is such a root cause of destruction in people's lives. Honestly, it's such a big thing. And therefore, there's a real need, isn't there, for men to step up and be spiritual fathers, not just physical fathers, you know? It'd be amazing, wouldn't it, if we could all become mentors. This is quite incredible. This was from Evangelicals Now in 2003. You could dispute some of these statistics, but they do bear themselves out. And what it said was that if you introduce children to Jesus, 3.5% of the time, the rest of the family will follow. I.e., if you do a mothers and toddlers group, a pop-in, a drop-in, a baby grow-in, whatever you want to call it, you know, holiday Bible clubs, youth clubs, children's work, and we're really hot on that kind of stuff in our church too. But when we say it's about evangelism, it's true, but only 3.5% of the time, the rest of the family will come to Christ. If little Johnny becomes a Christian, 3.5% of the time, the rest of the family comes to Christ. If you do women's stuff, and you introduce a woman to Jesus, statistically 17% of the time, the rest of the family will become followers of Jesus. If you introduce the man to Jesus, 93% of the time, the whole family follows. That is absolutely incredible. Now, you might want to challenge that, but I've seen it bear it out. I've seen that statistic at work. I've seen women come to faith, and the women sitting on their own in church week in, week out because their husbands don't follow. But I've seen a man come to faith, and he has his whole family there within a fortnight. Doesn't happen every time because it's 93% of the time. But it does happen. And that's really powerful. There could be sociological reasons for it. There could be theological reasons for it. Actually, I'm a pragmatist. I just think if that's the statistic, let's just get on it and reach the blokes because it's a great way to reach families. And I know the influence that I've had with my kids because my wife was working locally and I spent the last 20 years on the road actually and working away. If it comes to a Sunday and I said to my two really girly daughters actually, and I said, hey, I'm going to go pike fishing on Sunday. Where do the girls want to be? I mean, they didn't like mud and they don't like wet, horrible fish. But they want to be with their dad. But if I say we're going to go to church on Sunday and worship Jesus, because that's what we do as a family, that's where they want to be. Because they wanted to be where I was, because they didn't see me during the week that much. Do you get what I'm saying? So it's just a very, very powerful thing that we need to just bear in mind. This is incredibly powerful too. These are some statistics that were sourced from all over the place. Children with an absent father, 20 times more likely to have behavioural disorders, 10 times more likely to abuse substances, 9 times more likely to drop out of high school, 9 times more likely to end up in an institution, 14 times more likely to commit sexual offences, 20 times more likely to end up in prison, 5 times more likely to commit suicide, 32 times more likely to run away if there's not a dad around. I mean, that's incredible, isn't it? if you want a compelling case of reaching blokes and getting them engaged with the gospel and raising up spiritual mentors and spiritual fathers, there it is right there. I'm not saying that men are the answer. It's a balance. We've got godly women, we need godly blokes, but where men are abdicating their spiritual responsibility and where the church is failing to reach men and cause gender crises and all kinds of stuff, that's what you're going to get. That's what you're going to get. So reaching a bloke is just fundamentally important. The most common cause of death for a man under the age of 50 is suicide. That's just terrible. Now, moving on to strategies, here's what we have found out. Now, I have to say, I'm a card-carrying fusion of charismatic, Pentecostal, evangelical theology. In other words, I wave my hands around in worship, I pray in the Spirit, and I believe that if we pray, you can tell someone about Jesus, and the Holy Spirit can convict them, and they could become a Christian in a nanosecond, because God will do the work. I believe that, right? I believe that when the Spirit's at work, people can get saved. I hope you all believe that too. Holy Spirit transforms people's lives. But I've also found out you have to do a little bit of work. And what I found out is that it takes on average 5 years for a man to come to Christ from point of first hearing the gospel. 5 years. Why? I think because we're stubborn, opinionated, and we think we're experts on everything. I remember when the Higgs boson particle thing was discovered, listening to a plasterer and a plumber in a pub discussing faster than light speed. They were a plasterer and a plumber. They hadn't got a clue what they were talking about. It's like, oh yeah, well the Higgs boson is like this, isn't it? I'm thinking, no, it's really not. And you haven't got a clue what you're talking about, but you think you're an expert because you're a bloke. So telling them about Jesus and telling them to change their whole worldview is a challenge. It takes 5 years. Having heard the gospel an average 30 times. It used to be said you need to explain the gospel 7 times. On average, 30 times to a man before he receives Jesus. I didn't make this up. This is just the statistics. 80% of blokes who come to Christ were bought by a friend. Now, bearing in mind we're still very light on men in the UK church, most men who are bought by a friend were bought by a female friend, not a male friend. Why? Because men aren't very good at talking to each other. We grunt at each other. We don't communicate our feelings. In fact, yesterday, myself, Andy Hawthorne, and his wife Michelle were on our way to a restaurant together in Cheadle, and Michelle bumped into someone she'd not seen for a while, and me and Andy were kind of like standing there. And then 5 minutes later, we said, think we'll move on to the restaurant. And we sort of silently moved off. And Michelle said, well, I'll see you there 30 minutes later. How does that happen? And Andy actually said to me, I'm like, if I see someone in the street, I'm like, hello, mate. And they go, hello, mate. And then we go, bye, mate. And then we just sort of move on. And somehow we've bonded with each other and connected. I think that's really true. Like, my wife, Karen, We've been together for 27 years and I still don't get this. She would like phone my mother-in-law and they'd talk for an hour. And then I'd say, what are you doing this afternoon? She'd say, I'm going shopping with my mum. I'm like, yeah, you were just on the phone for an hour. So what were you talking about? We've got a lot to catch up on. What are you going to talk about this afternoon? Loads. I'm like, to me, the phone is like an instrument to be used. I'm like, I pick it up and I phone my dad and I go, hi, Dad. He goes, all right, son. How are you doing? Okay. How's your prostate? Much better. Bye, Dad. Bye, son. I think that'll do for 6 months. It's fine. We say that, J. John actually says, men are like Arctic rivers. They're frozen at the mouth. To be completely honest with you, the first 3 statistics were impeccably sourced. I made the last one up because it suits everything I've just said. But in the interest of honesty, we say 95% of men are tongue-tied. So the church often teaches personal evangelism, how to faith share. What I use is like a gang approach. like a band of brothers approach, to create a context where men find it easier to share their faith, that taps into some of the things I've been talking about, the loneliness, the testosterone factor, the way that men communicate. I'm going to unpack that with you. And we have this four-level strategy. Level one is make some mates. That's a challenge. Most Christian men haven't got non-Christian friendships. In fact, at a point of conversion, you lose all your non-Christian friends within 32 and a half seconds. Number two is mention Jesus in conversation, which we said can be very difficult. Number three is telling them shed loads more. And level four is seeing them become committed followers of Jesus Christ. Have you got it? Thanks for coming. You've been great. So there you go. That's about all we got. Here, check this out. Hopefully we'll get this working. This will explain what we call level one.
Liv and Clara met at rock climbing. They get on like a house on fire. Jeff and Michael met through their wives. They get on like two men who met through their wives.
It was so hilarious.
The Guardian and The Observer, filled with things you actually want to do.
I've actually been in that place. When we moved to Bath, well, actually, we moved to Midtown Norton because we couldn't afford to live in Bath 10 years ago. Karen dropped the kids off at school and then came back. We'd been there 2 weeks. She came back and she said, oh, I met this amazing person and we're having dinner with them next weekend. I went, oh, how do you do that? That's like voodoo. How's that even a thing? So she booked in this dinner for 2 weeks later, and I'm kind of slightly exaggerating, but slightly not. When they came, let's call them Mark and Louise. Mark was like a historian who loved ancient poems and medieval tapestry, and I don't. And one of those things I said about him is true. But he was kind of sandal-wearing, wispy-bearded, and I'm not. You know, I like rugby, judo, Formula One, boxing, and watercolours, which is a strange combination, admittedly. But we didn't really hit it off, and Karen kicked me under the table twice, which I actually said, why are you kicking me under the table? Because I didn't realise what was going on. It's a bloke, you see. And at the end of it, we said goodbye, and I come from Romford. I'm not really trained how to do this. I've got much better at this now, but this was some years ago. You kiss each other goodbye, don't you? And I never know what cheek to go for. And as I leaned over to kiss Louise goodbye on the cheek, Mark leaned over to kiss Karen goodbye, and I kissed Mark's arm, and it was just a terrible moment. And at the end of it, I was like, oh, it's so horrible. And then Louise and Karen looked at each other and said, what a wonderful evening. Why don't we go bowling next week? I'm like, this is so bad. Most men's best friends are their wives' best friends' husbands. Because they don't organise a social calendar often. Who organises a social calendar in your house? The wives often drive the pace and what we do, so the men are walking lonely, actually. I mean, I might be overstating some things, but I need to make a point. A lot of men are walking lonely. A lot of men don't have a brother they can really deeply share with and connect with, or they don't have non-Christian mates. So we have this thing called level one. And level one is very simple. We say this. Most men communicate over the shoulder in the context of an activity. They don't get close. I mean, even now, I mean, me and Nick have cycled across continents together, and even now, as I get closer to my dear brother here, he wants to move back from me, because men are like repelling magnets if you invade the space. No, we don't. Actually, it is a thing. I don't know why it is, and you might say we need to challenge that, but it is a thing. I get too close, I'm doing it again. It's actually becoming deeply uncomfortable, and we know each other very, very well. Men prefer to communicate actually like this, and in sort of in muted terms, we'll sort of look over our shoulders and say, oh, did you see the game? Yeah. and then sort of look away again and look at feet. And if you look at men, the way they stand together, they form sort of loose semicircles. They don't like to close the circle and get too close, and they're not too tactile. So let me put it this way. If your outreach in your church to men consists of a men's breakfast at 8 o'clock in the morning with a bowl of porridge and some compote and a talk about the Rotherham Canal system, you will attract men who like to get up at 8 o'clock in the morning and eat porridge and compote and with canal talks. That's 0.002% of the Christian population, let alone the general population. That is a very small group of men. And also, you're expecting men who don't know each other to sit across a table and make conversation with someone they've never met before. Guys in church have been bred for this. You do home groups and prayer groups and all sorts of groups. Like, you've got to understand how to do that whole small talk thing. I'm terrible at it. I'm actually quite shy. You're not going to pick this up. You'll see me speaking and hosting and stuff. But I'm actually quite shy and a bit of an introvert. And when I walk into a room, I'm like, oh, you know, I have to think about what I'm going to say and stuff. So if it's just a men's breakfast, it's not going to work. So we say, quite simply this, shoot stuff. Blow stuff up. Muck about. Fish for things, plough stuff, sail stuff, swing off things, clean stuff up. In other words, do what you're good at and invite a mate into it. Over the years now, I've done a number of epic cycle rides. First started doing them 10 years ago. First conceived this idea with a mate. To cut a very long story short, I was actually leading a sports week and I was extremely unfit at the time. And I tried to get on a road bike for just about the first time since I was a teenager. And you had to cycle out this slope that was about 300 yards long. And I was pouring with sweat and absolutely exhausted in the heat in Lanzarote. And my mate, who looked like a pepper army in Lycra, came alongside me. And I said, oh, it's a bit hard, this cycling lark, isn't it? This is some years ago. And he went, that's because you're fat and unfit. And I thought, oh, fair enough. So he said, I bet you can't cycle to... from Land's End to John O'Groats in under a fortnight. And I went, I bet I can. He went, do it then. So later that night, over a Diet Coke, we shook hands and we agreed to do it. And I'm like my word is my bond kind of guy. So I sold my motorbike at the time and I bought a German Shepherd dog. I started running with the dog and cycling a bicycle. And then I invited 7 mates who weren't Christians to do it with me. And I organised Christian hospitality from one end of the country to the other. And we did it in 8.5 days. That was 1,000 miles there, about 970 miles in 8.5 days. And we experienced Christian hospitality, and we got shoulder to shoulder. On day 3 of one of those rides, there was a guy next to me who I was just getting to, because it was a mate who'd invited a mate. He said, thank you so much for these 3 days. It's just blown my mind the way people have opened their homes to us. And I went, ah, great, mate, because they're experiencing Christian hospitality for the first time. And he said, it's been so good for me as well to clear my head. And I said, why is that, mate? He said, oh, my sister died of cancer some years ago, and I've never really grieved properly. I've just been thinking about it over the last 3 days. I went, oh, wow. I said, that's amazing you've been able to do that. He went, yeah, I don't want to talk about it anymore. I just wanted to share it with you. And cycled off. She was fitter than me. And I've experienced that twice. There was one time cycling up a mountain in the Alps, because the year after we did that, I thought, well, let's do that again. And one of my mates said, because we were in Kendal, actually, freezing cold, eating a pork pie and having a cup of tea, having cycled there. And he said, let's go somewhere warm and better next year. I said, where are we going? He went, well, let's go from Calais to Nice. Oh, that sounds good. Red wine, cheese, baguettes. He said, oh, brilliant. So we shook hands on it. My word is my bond. About 100 yards later down the road, he said, it's going to be a bit tough cycling over the Alps, isn't it? I went, he never said that. So we actually did 1,000 miles and 92,000 feet of climbing. I nearly died. But in training for it, cycle up a mountain with one guy who was going to go with us. We took 16 guys at a time, and about 3/4 of them weren't Christians. This guy got alongside me, and he said, thanks for this week. And I said, oh, cool. And he said, yeah, my brother committed suicide. And I feel like I've said goodbye to him cycling up this mountain. Wow. What is it that getting side-by-side guys, they feel they can talk? It's because it's safe. And guys start to open up. And I said to him, I'd love to pray for you. And he went, please pray for me, but not with me. But I'd love you to pray for me. And he went cycling off, because he was a lot fitter than me. In fact, shortly afterwards, I was overtaken by a butterfly, which is actually a thing. This is excruciatingly embarrassing. But get side by side the guys, and they'll open up. We call it level 1. No talk. just being. No epilogue. Just the conduct of your lives. Build the relationships. Reach out. We could talk about how we could do that later. Here's another one. 30 metres of builder's plastic. Cover it in foam and water. Chuck yourself down it. Have a barbecue afterwards. And that's that. Why? I don't know. It's good fun. And what happens is the guys bond. In fact, one person actually criticised me for talking about this. And they said, it's a bit ageist. Everything you're showing is a bit ageist. Well, here's the thing. Do stuff that attract guys in their mid-20s to their mid-30s and you'll get everyone. That's what we found. You know, you draw a crowd that way. And don't take yourselves too seriously, but take the mission seriously. And the guys will bond. You know, give them a burger and a beer afterwards or Coke or whatever, and the guys will bond. But actually, it's a mindset thing too. If you're an older guy and you feel you can't do it, be there for the younger guys. Show some willing. And it's about mission. Not just about you having fun, it's about mission and reaching out and giving the guys a great experience. This happened in Bath, and to the person who said it was ageist, I said, well, it wasn't, because the next day an 82-year-old woman went down that. We never met her before, we just put her down there, but she thought it was great. So anyway, there we go. And level two is then where most churches start. Level two is the curry night, the fish and chip supper, the pine pint, the fire pit night, the organised hike, the... Basically, saturated fat is the key to success in evangelism to men. If you want to get the guys out, just load the plates up and provide a defibrillator, and it's all going to go well for you. Apologies to any heart surgeons here, but this is about eternal consequences, so it's very important that we do this. Load the plate up and be very, very generous with your welcome. And then CVM has a network now of 200 to 300 speakers of all kinds of backgrounds that will come out to your events and communicate the gospel. Make it story-based. Do it well. You know, be very, very generous. But it can't start here. It's part of the journey. You know, you've got to start by building the relationships. You can't just start with level two. We also do this thing in Lanzarote where there's 30 sports all included. It's the second week of March every single year. And we can take up to about 40 guys now. The conditions are it's you, a Christian man, inviting your non-Christian mate, and we'll do it for 100 quid. The brochure price is about 1,200 quid. And it's an absolutely phenomenal place. Free road bikes, mountain bikes, a spa, swimming pool. And basically, it's a concentrated thing like the cycle ride. And what we're basically saying is this. It's all about building relationships. Authentic relationships where they know that they know what you're about. It kind of works like this. I knew of a church where, in fact, I did this in Chesterfield where I lived some years ago. There were a group of guys playing cage football, and that grew to the point where it was happening two nights a week. And then we thought, well, how do we break out of just playing football? So a tour was organised of one of the local breweries, and a whole bunch of guys turned up. We didn't do a Christian talk or anything, but it was breaking out of just doing the football. The football is aggressive and fun and stuff, and people are building relationships. There's no gospel content, so we thought we need to build on from there. So we did something outside of football, and then we got back playing football again. And then I organised a comedy and a kind of curry type night, where I invited a comedian who's a Christian to come and do a night for the blokes and their wives, and then I was going to share my story. No, I said a comedian who's a Christian, not a Christian comedian. There's a difference. I'll leave you to figure that out. But comedians who are also Christians, you know, on the clean comedy circuit are extremely funny, and they're not trying to do something other than be extremely funny but clean. But then I stood up and I gave my testimony. About 110 people turned out that night. And then we just got back playing football. That's level one to level two. And then level three is this. Level three is like your alpha courses, your Christianity Explored, the Y course. Well, there's a whole bunch of these courses out there. And we've done some stuff at CVM working on this for blokes. But what we advise is this. It has to come out of relationship. If you just start with an alpha course, it's not going to work. What happens is your whole church will sign up to the first time you do alpha. You might notice this. You get 100 people the first time you do alpha, 50 people the first time you do alpha. 3 years later, you're getting 10 people in the ferret. Because you're not building the relationships. So look, if I try and imagine it like this, like there's this pillar here is non-Christian man, right? This is Bob the non-Christian. Bob reads the Sun, he likes a Cornish pasty, he works in a factory, he never thinks about Jesus, he doesn't think about God, he's living his life and that's that. Over here is Bob Mark II. This pillar is Bob Mark II. He tithes, he helps in the Sunday school, he worships, he loves the Lord. The journey to getting Bob from here to here is a process. I know the Holy Spirit's involved, and there can be dynamic transformations along the way. I'm up for that. But also, I think we have to do our bit. Jesus took the disciples on a journey, right? It's no different to that. It's the same thing. Don't think I'm being ungodly by saying this. I'm not trying to be manipulative or contrived. It's just we need to build relationships so that we give people an authentic chance, a deep chance to hear the gospel. Alpha is here on the scale. Like, you can't just start here. You have to start way, way back. So most churches, if their outreach is a men's breakfast, it's actually about here. Like, yeah, they've got to be prepared to come into that. We have to start way back. So, like, I'm on this all the time. I've got a motorcycle group I go out with, mates in the gym. I'm just trying to make friends all the time. Deep, authentic friends. They know what I'm about. I just took 3 non-Christian mates on a motorcycle tour of France and Belgium. One of them came off, actually. It was quite funny. He actually fell off into a bog and came out looking like a mud monster. But that's a memory. And that's important because men bond in moments. Not through events, through moments. It's like this. At age 18, no, 15, I did the Duke of Edinburgh Gold Expedition. On a weekend, there was a hurricane in Snowdonia. And we were all in two-man tents, and 2 of them blew away. So we ended up with a bunch of us trying to get into a two-man tent. It was horrible. And in the middle of the night, we were taking in turns to re-peg the tent down. I went outside in the early hours, and the guys put on a stove, one of those little stoves of water for me to make myself a cup of tea about 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And so I thought, thanks, guys. I'm soaking wet in a T-shirt and a pair of boxes, you know, I'm freezing. So I'm making this cup of tea, and I'm putting my powdered milk in, and I'm stirring it, and I notice that my tea is getting stiffer and stiffer. And what I realised I'd done is I put smash in it instead of powdered milk. And so, because I'm a man, I ate it. And I said, that's what I meant to do. Tea-flavoured potato. I'm combining a food with my drink. I was 33 when I met them again, these guys. The first thing they say to me is, BT, do you remember when you put smash in your cup of tea? I'm like, I'm a 33-year-old grown man with kids now. Can't we just move on from this? Men will talk endlessly, ladies, about the same things over and over and over again. We are so boring, but we like it. We bond in moments. Create some moments and memories with the guys. And their guards will come down. They'll be open. What is it that transformed your life? What is this spiritual experience that you've had? They realize you're not a nutter, but they'll realize that you're different. And it gives those blokes a fighting chance to hear the gospel and actually really take it on board. And it can be a process. It's not 3 years for everyone. But Alpha is like the bit at the end, really, you know, in a whole process and a journey. And what we say to guys is this, and I'm chucking loads of things at you, but these things are so important. If you've been building authentic relationships and you've eaten your smash-flavoured tea and slid down builders' plastic and blown up caravans and shot things and then they've heard talks and all kinds of like interesting, full-on, really good testimony talks and stuff, and it's all gone super great, then if you say, there's an Alpha course, and it starts on the 10th of October, and it's 12 weeks, and there's a Holy Spirit weekend, and it's 7 o'clock every Tuesday, they're like, what the heck is that? I can't do that. I've got to go to Brussels on business, or I'm on shifts, I can't. And what's the Holy Spirit weekend, and all that kind of stuff. And there's other psychological issues too, like, I've been in a small Alpha group before, where we start talking about personal things. Very often, there, as the Holy Spirit starts to convict someone, stuff is coming up that men are feeling convicted about. It's people are being drawn towards being repentant and changing their lives. What if a guy's addicted to porn or is drinking too much or there's some domestic issues or, you know, he's on the edge of committing adultery or something? All of these things are happening out there in the world. All kinds of stuff like that. He's not going to talk about that in front of Ethel in his Alpha group. But he will. I'm not being horrible. It's just the truth. But if it's Dave and Steve and Bob that he's slid down builder's plastic with and eating smash-flavoured tea with and he's listened to some talks and his journey with them, he will, because I've seen it say, there's this thing and I'm really wrestling with it and I don't want it to stop. And you can say, it's Jesus who will help that stop, mate. Only Jesus is going to transform your lives. So we say this, when it comes to a group like Alpha or something, do it small. Do it with 7 or 8 guys. Base it around food. And do it like this. Say, look, guys, you're asking all these questions. How about we do Alpha now? Like, it's this course we got. And we get some pepperoni pizza in. And then you can do it around my place. So we can do it around the pub. And how about next Wednesday? And they go, oh, I can do Tuesday. And they go, okay, let's do it Tuesday. And then on Tuesday evening, you say, should we do this again next week and look at week 2? And they'll probably say, but why did Ganesh drink milk in 1990? Forget all this. And what is this Trinity stuff? And is there UFOs? Because they're blokes and they're experts and everything. They might not be ready for week 2. So you say, okay, let's do week 1 again maybe. And then you say, should we meet here again next week? And they say, oh, I can't do it next week, but I can do it the week after. And you say, that's cool, that's fine, let's do it then. And then you have to phone everyone and chase everyone up and invite them again and remind them and get the pizzas in and really drive it, because they're blokes and they'll forget. They're not just dropping off the edge. That's just what life is. And so this 10-week or 12-week Alpha course might become 20 weeks. But what happens in the end of it is you've journeyed at their pace and you've done it through relationships. And at the end of it, they'll want to keep meeting. And then you've got your single-sex discipleship accountability group. 80% of them will probably come to Christ. And the people who haven't will want to still keep meeting because they've become a band of brothers. Do you know what I'm saying? It's a journey of relationship. And in the mix of that, the Holy Spirit will work. But it's real, honestly, it's relentless hard work. CVM's now, after 25 years, we've got a network of just under 500 men's groups all doing this stuff, just constantly doing it. And there's all kinds of resources you can plug into. You know, if you're a church leader, just think about that kind of stuff. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things around church culture which we haven't had time to look at. Think about the whole rites of passage thing. How do we get our young men to start entering into this? So there's actually something you want to aspire to when they see the way the men are in the church. We don't have an authentic rite of passage anymore in our culture. Have you noticed that? Where we say, you're a man now. These are all things we need to start thinking about in terms of our discipleship and how we reach out to guys. So I probably should stop there to take some questions, other than say this very important thing. You'll notice here that there's not that many activities factored in. What we're saying is this. You do a level 1 event, Slide Down Builders Plastic in autumn. At that event, say, we've got a speaker coming. It's an ex-sergeant major in the SAS. We've got a guy like that on our speakers list. You know, and he's going to come and share about how he met Christ in the desert in the first Gulf War. It's an amazing story, and there's going to be bacon sandwiches. You're up for it. Everyone will go, brilliant, amazing. In fact, let me tell you something. The best night of the week that we've discovered for level 2 events isn't a Friday night or a Saturday night. It's not even a Saturday morning for a men's breakfast. It's Monday or Tuesday evening. Monday or Tuesday evening, your numbers will double. Why? Because if a man's got a deadline, he's thinking, I've got the rest of the week to worry about that. You know, Friday night, they're trying to get home quickly. Saturday, there's stuff going on. Sunday, there's all kinds of stuff normally going on, or football and stuff. Don't compete with it. Compliment with it. Monday or Tuesday nights are a lot easier for guys. Men are getting depressed on Sunday evening about facing work. That's why they put Top Gear on it and grand. That, seriously, it is. It's the blues. Why do you think James May's Toys and Top Gear is Sunday evening? It's a reason for it. It's the man's own TV slot. So you give them something to look forward to on Monday or Tuesday. And then you have to invite them all. Then you have to remind them all. That's level 2. And then at the level 2 event, you say, we're going to go shooting clay pigeons. We've got 20 places. Who's up for it? And then you invite them to that. And so it goes on. 3 level 1, 3 level 2, and level 3 is ready to go at any time. Any time. And level 4 is a man-friendly church, which is another talk for another time. Any questions? That's the strategy. Fire out some questions. I hope it just gives you a snapshot, doesn't it, in the time that we got. But the passion is that we see men's lives transform. Any questions on disagreements, dissensions, arguments, rows? We are talking about men here, so I don't mind rampant disagreement. I'm quite secure. If you've got a better idea, I'll just nick it and use it in the next seminar. So I'm not very precious about that sort of thing. Yes. Yeah. It's really in how you gauge the conversation. For those who didn't hear the question, how do you change this for different demographics? So, for instance, when I lived in Somerset, the big thing there was cider tasting and cheese. And seriously, it was. We used to have cider and cheese nights and all that kind of stuff. When I lived in Romford, it was going down the dog track. It's as simple as that, you know. There's one guy actually who changed it because he was living in rural Buckinghamshire. And there was no community stuff. So he set up a men's thing that became the community hub, really, the community breakfast once a month. And then occasionally he would, so the local politician would speak, the local councils, they'd address community issues. And then every other month they'd have the women in as well. Then they'd do women's ones and men's ones and stuff. And he would drop in a Christian speaker every so often. And he didn't really need to worry too much about the level one stuff because they just wanted a community vibe. So you just have to vary it, don't you? So what I'm trying to give you is a broad principle about how men communicate and how you get into the mix of that. Yeah, completely. And what you'll find is, so that question there was, what about in areas where there's high immigration, asylum seekers and so on? What we found in some of the inner city churches, it's actually getting men involved in a godly project has been quite something. So getting involved in shelter work, in homeless projects, in, you know, supporting asylum seekers, if you've got some skills, bring them to bear. Actually getting non-Christian guys involved in a godly project, if the heartbeat's there, there's something, I think, if someone's got a heart for the poor, there's something of God in that. They might not be Christian, so water it. What we did with one of our cycle rides was really raise money for impoverished kids in Africa. I mean, you had these guys cycling across the Alps, but they were raising tens of thousands of pounds for a project in Africa, which was a Christian-run project. And that was quite impacting. So it's that kind of, get people involved in something, I think.
How would you deal with approaching homeless and addicted people?
Yeah, so homeless and addicted people, it's really specialist stuff, actually. People wrestling with addictions. I'd say get involved in a project that's already going. But if there isn't one, then just seek out advice from people who have been really experienced in it, because it's such a... the Message Trust, we've not got a specialist homeless project, but there's a guy who's just getting involved in it. But obviously, we're reaching out to people who have been homeless, and we work with people who have been addicted. So our work is often the next stage along, where people have come through that process of rehabilitation, which is incredibly specialist work. So we work with those agencies to take people to the next stage, really. Yep. Yep. Yeah, so when I was in the bank, obviously it was easier in one sense, but since I started church planting or running mission agencies, the weird thing is actually running the Message Trust is like having, in one sense, a normal job, because it's just full-on hours and you're running essentially a very big organisation. So, but a lot of my time is spent with Christians. For me, it's having an interest and having a life outside of that. So one of my passions is motorcycles, and I've got a group of guys that I go motorcycling with who aren't Christians, and always been a little bit into weight training and had a group of guys down the gym that I'd hang out with. I've always made it my business to have something outside of my working life where I've got non-Christian mates, and I really make a point of that. There's so many evangelists don't have non-Christian friends, but I've laboured that in my own life. Because otherwise, you just end up totally disconnected and living in a bubble. So I make space for it wherever I've moved to, actually. The challenge becomes when they become Christians, you've got to find a new mate. So it's very frustrating. Very frustrating as an evangelist. There you go. Yeah. But you've got to make time to have a life, really, I think. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. There's a resource called Man Made, which is a rites of passage course for teenage guys that we help collaborate with the Boys Brigade and various other agencies, that looks at behaviour, respect, honour, all that kind of stuff, which really advise you to take a look at. But also, I think we really need older, mature, godly men to look at how to be mentors to younger guys, particularly fatherless young lads. It's such a critical thing. And also, I just want to shout out to Emma's work, actually, called Respect Me, which really looks at issues like self-esteem and bullying and sexting in schools and stuff. And it's not just a girls' ministry, this is also to boys, because we really need to impact a male culture at the moment with some of these things. So check out Respect Me as well, maybe get them into your schools. Yeah. Yeah. So the question was, is it par for the course reaching guys? Is it just hard, graft and frustrating? Yes. Thank you for the question. You've got to be relentless. You've got to be relentless. And you need a team. It can't rely on one person doing it in the church or you'll burn out and be disappointed. Has to be a team. And you've got to expect sometimes an event will go wrong and another time it'll be amazing. And there's no rhyme or rhythm to it, but it's blokes. And they're always booking last minute and you're always going to have to hold your nerve. It's really hard, but you just got to keep going at it. But when you see the breakthrough, it's amazing. I'll finish with this story because it's 9 minutes past. It's a beautiful story. It's one of the best things that's happened to me, actually, in terms of evangelism. I went to speak at a curry night once after being away all week in the Netherlands. And I was really depressed about it because when I turned up, they said there was going to be about 18 blokes and it was a chicken boona and a naan bread. And I said, what if you don't like chicken boona? And he said, well, have a naan bread then. You know, it was really horrible. And I didn't want to go because I was so tired. But this bloke turned up who heard the gospel that night. And a really aggressive-looking guy. And he challenged me afterwards quite aggressively, actually. And to cut a very long story short, because I haven't got time to go into it, he turned out to be a neo-Nazi terrorist that was under in a safe house with a police officer who was there with him. And he heard the gospel that night. And he'd been arrested planting a pipe bomb at gunpoint. All kinds of horrible things have gone on. He's a very dangerous guy. And he turned up that night because there was nothing else to do, and the policeman was a Christian, and he brought his mate along to a curry night from this relentless group of people, these guys who've been month in, month out, putting stuff on and building relationships, and they brought this guy along, and the next morning, this terrorist guy gave his life to Christ, and has since been preaching the gospel non-stop around the nation, and first person he led to Christ was a Jewish guy, the next time person he led to Christ was a black guy, and then on Holocaust Memorial Sunday, he preached the gospel to 1,500 school kids about peace and hope and reconciliation. And it came out of a curry night for 20 blokes in Barrow-on-Soar in Leicestershire. How beautiful is that? So it's worth it. It's worth it. There we go. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to check out message.org.uk to find out how you can support or even get involved with one of our teams.